educate me on this carbon program. I think, honestly, it's hard to keep, for me to wrap my brain around sometimes with all the focus on climate and carbon. I think a lot of growers are probably in that same boat.
There's no question, Don. I think whether it's the industry, the environmental folks, or the American farmer, I think everybody has a lot of questions about it, and it's really a few different problems to solve. One is, of course, capturing the carbon. How do you do it? What matters? What gets credit? What doesn't? So that's one problem. Another problem, you know, quite frankly, is how the grower becomes whole in this. Because if your ground isn't willing to be tilled, if it doesn't perform well under no-till situations, which is one of the solutions that help capture carbon, or you're not willing to put money into cover crop seed as a farmer, if it doesn't have an economic benefit, it's hard to see a plan forward. And yet, you know, on behalf of the planet, we have to do something different. And so it's very complex. And so, you know, as our CEO would say, complex problems are going to require complex answers. And so I think what you see from us is this is a step for us to understand more and more about carbon, how we can participate as a steward and a participant with the American farmer and cooperatives. You know, we have to take this step so we can learn, but it's a difficult thing, Don.
Certainly, a grower to get involved needs some incentives, and you have some incentives built with this. There's a collaboration with Bayer, right?
Yeah, through the Bayer program, if the grower meets the milestones of going no-till and does a cover crop, it can obtain up to $9. And then additionally, if they use CHS-branded products that help hold nutrients in the soil, we've seen really good activity with those products, and they perform really well. Tribar primarily, if the grower will use those kind of fertilizer efficiency products, we'll pay them an additional $3. So there's an additional incentive to get the grower up to $12 if they meet the requirements. And we recognize that, you know, not for every farm, $12 might not really ring the bell, but it's a step, Don. And we're really hoping to see the carbon markets develop and become a tradable market, something that is more substantial. We know that, you know, there's a lot of plans and a lot of food companies that would love to see further investments in a kind of trading carbon as its own clearing, but we're not there yet. But if it has a derivative market, you know, we want to be there at day one, and so these are steps for CHS to participate with the farmer to try and discover as much as we can so that when there is returns behind the carbon programs, we're participating in a healthy way.
So is there a trace back from the food company back to the farmer at this point, or where do we go from there?
There are not trace backs. There are food companies that are passionate about this, but there aren't big programs that are tied back, you know, as you mentioned. But I think at some point you'll see those companies really step in and play more of a leadership role from consumer to farmer, from farmer to consumer. And, you know, again, we're at a perfect intersection in that relationship to help provide a little common sense and quite a bit of leadership. So we'll look forward to watching this evolve and playing our part.
If I can kind of go back to your retail sector days, obviously a challenge. We've had a swan, you know, every black swan in the world seems like it's hit agriculture, from natural disasters to COVID to inflation. I mean, there's a lot of things. Give us an idea in the supply chain thing we're talking about now of kind of the CHS approach.
Well, supply chain, you know, is in its simplest terms, and I know there were some comments made that people don't understand, but I think folks know that, you know, when goods are manufactured, they have to get moved to where they get used, and everything between those two activities is part of the supply chain. And so that's, you know, ocean-going vessels and rail cars and trucks and, you know, even vans in some cases, Don. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's everything it takes to get goods from manufacturing to the end user. And so we're involved in that. You know, we're one of the largest bulk commodity traders of ocean-going freight globally because of our global grain platform and our crop nutrients platform. Our crop protection team has to source from China and India, so we're very involved in you know, those countries and what's happening for manufacturing and the steps it takes to make sure that we've got goods here when the American farmer needs them. And so the supply chain is more complicated and more expensive today than it's ever been, and we believe that it's going to stay this way far longer than some of the experts believe it will, because quite frankly, when one thing gets solved, it seems like another thing falters. And we just don't think it's going to be solved through planting a 22. We think it might have a tail out to 2023. And that's, you know, that's just something that we work on every day. And CHS, because of our global footprint, but because of our Midwest saturation, we feel really comfortable with our processes, our teams, and our industry connections to help solve supply chain issues. We do it all the time. It's just now it's more focused, so we've got more folks working on it than we've had in the past.
We have this mentality of a just-in-time type of delivery. Is that are those days behind us now?
I'd say, you know, it shifted a bit from just-in-time to just-in-case. And with the shortages in crop protection, especially in glyphosate and glufosinate, which will resonate well with your producers and the retailers in your network, Don, we're seeing a lot of sales being pulled back into the year. So everybody's buying more earlier to help solve that, because the farmer knows if it's in his shop, if it's in his warehouse, he has possession, he'll get his acre sprayed. And so the farmer's buying more earlier, the retailer's buying more earlier, the manufacturer's selling in different kind of capacities than they've had in the past, both in volume and in the way things are priced. And so the whole channel is behaving differently, Don, to help solve this, to make sure we've got enough of the right material to take care of the crop the right way in the spring.
Kind of along that vein, did we see more fertilizer put down this fall?
This is, so the last fall, a year ago, was the biggest fall we'd had since 2014 in our retail team. So kind of a lull, which followed kind of the market regression. And now this fall, we've had even larger fall. And you know, it's kind of a funny thing. I know when farmers were paying $5.50 for urea in, you know, the upper Midwest, it didn't feel very good last July. But by the time we got to October, they were pretty darn glad they had $550 urea. So, you know, now what's left in front of us is, I think, a lot of anxiety for those that have not applied, but a lot of satisfaction for the acres that have been applied because of the numbers that were booked. But there's still profit to be made for the farmer. It's just going to be complicated, and it's just a lot of risk to manage.
It's got to be that communication really through the whole system then.
The more we know collectively, the better we are. And, you know, history is just one way to look at the market. But now we have to decide just what happens to the upper Midwest corn acre, how many more soybeans get planted because of increased soybean demand, increased soybean crush. So there's just a lot of factors that we're going to be watching. But quite frankly, to meet, you know, the expectation of, you know, the new soybean oil demand on next spring, you know, we're putting big bets into soybean seed production because we think soybean acres are going to really, really step up to compete, and that'll be the trend over the next few years.
It's interesting, at least in our footprint, as you know, we've got a lot of processing that's being talked about or hopefully moving forward, even some corn processing type facilities. Obviously not in the CHS world, but all of that really helps to bring more acres at what you're looking for.
Well, we are. We've got soybean processing in Fairmont, Minnesota, Mankato, Minnesota, canola crush in Hallock, but we're putting $176 million into our soybean crush to make our plants larger, expanding the amount of beans that we can crush. And, you know, that's just to meet the demand. And a lot of the new demand is competition between fuel, renewable diesel fuel, and, you know, tax incentives like the state of California had done, talking about Oregon and California, Idaho perhaps following suit. We'll see. But every time a tax incentive is issued and creates more demand for that soybean oil, we have to continue to raise the acres because the Chinese aren't going to quit buying, right? The traditional processor still wants it. And we consume a great deal of our soybean oil just for food here in America. And so there's all this competition, and it's a tax-based competition is where it's come from. But at the end of the day, we think it's sustainable. This administration seems to be pointing people in that direction, pointing industry in that direction, and we're going to keep responding, Don. I just think, you know, this is a good spot for the American farmer to be patient but watch these markets develop and keep an eye on it, because there's a lot of tells that will happen as the states start to tip like dominoes and more fossil fuel reduction in terms of diesel fuel goes to renewables. If that's what happens, the demand for soybeans is just going to continue to increase.
We could go on and on. It's great to be back in face-to-face annual meetings once again.
Oh, man. Taking a year off was so hard on so many people. You know, and you know, the COVID pandemic was, we're very blessed. Our business didn't falter, and the men and women that show up and work for CHS, we just admire them and what they were able to accomplish, because, you know, revenues grew 30% year over year for us. And the ag side of the business hasn't been this strong for ages, and that's because the men and women showed up early and stayed late and fought through this thing, Don. And so to be here, you know, at the fall of 2021, back at the Minneapolis Convention Center celebrating, you know, this, that we're all back face-to-face, feels really, really good for the company and for us personally.